Well, good morning. My name is David Kirkham, and had absolutely no idea I was going to be doing this until 30 seconds ago, but so I hope you will just indulge that, although I'm hoping I won't give you too much to indulge, because I'm going to give most of the time to our two panelists, Don Horrocks and Janet Epp Buckingham. Don is from the United Kingdom, head of public affairs for the Evangelical Alliance. He's been head of public affairs for this alliance since 2001 and oversees the Alliance's Theology and Public Policy Advisory Commission, and is a director of the Coalition for Marriage. He's held for 25 years senior positions in commerce and management consultancy, and studied for a doctorate in systematic and historical theology, and has published a number of books and reports. Don is a Baptist minister and a research associate at the London School of Theology, married and has three children. Which I always like that part. It puts a human face on all of these accomplishments that you have. So, Janet Epp Buckingham is Associate Professor of Political Studies and History, Trinity Western University, and the Director of the Laurentian Leadership Center. Did I say that correctly? Laurentian? Dr. Buckingham is She previously served as director, law and public policy for the Evangelical Fellowship of Canada, and in 1986 received her LLB from Dalhousie University. She clerked for Mr. Justice Barry Strayer of the Federal Court, this is all Canada, keep in mind, from 1986 to 1987. She'd been called to the bar and practiced law in Nova Scotia and Ontario. She completed her LLD at the University of Stellenbosch, South Africa, which I saw that last night, but we never made that connection when we were talking. We're going to have a conference in Stellenbosch this coming year. Did her dissertation comparing religious freedom in Canada and South Africa, which honestly should be fascinating comparison. Her book, Fighting Over God, A Legal and Political History of Religious Freedom in Canada, will be coming out in less than about 6 months, I guess. Anyway. And then what isn't written here, so she's working actively to create, may I say this, create a Christian law school in Canada, and perhaps has many insights born of that process. Whether or not you'll be sharing those, I'm not sure. So we'll turn the time to each of you to do an initial presentation and then prepare with some time for all of you to be able to, I hope, respond or post questions to them. Would you go ahead?
You have no objection to the role?
No, thank you. Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for your inviting me here. It's a great honor to be here. I'm enjoying the conference very much indeed. It's my first time in Salt Lake City. I'm not a lawyer, which may be a good thing. I'm a practitioner. I'm a frontline person. I deal with the day-to-day problems that Christians and other religions are facing, particularly in the United Kingdom. I represent an organization that is itself a representative organization and claims to represent the vast majority of Britain's 2 to 4 million evangelical Christians. We seek to be a voice in national debate, and we seek to engage with government and semi or quasi-government bodies. I mentioned about the Coalition for Marriage on my CV. I was a director, and I'm a director of that organization, having just been involved with the perennial issue of same-sex marriage, which has just been forced through the British parliamentary system. Today, I'm going to have a very narrow focus, if I may. I want to focus on something that the Evangelical Alliance commissioned last year in the British Parliament, in the UK Parliament. And last year, we worked with members of Parliament to set up a commission. We called it Christians in Parliament, and we produced a report, having taken lots of evidence, called Clearing the Ground. And you can see that it's got the official imprimatur of the UK Parliament, the House of Commons and the House of Lords on it. And I want to tell you about that inquiry and the results from it, because there's lots of myths about whether Christians are having a hard time or not in the UK. And some Christians talk about how persecuted they are in the UK, but of course when I meet Christians in other parts of the world, I would myself not use the word persecution, but perhaps that's one of the problems that Christians have, the view of what they're experiencing as being exaggerated. Anyway, we had a survey and a report that was produced. And I want to give you the context for that survey, for that inquiry, and to present the findings that we found from that last year, if I may. And the whole remit of that inquiry was to answer the question, are Christians in the UK experiencing problems in living out their faith, and what are these problems being caused by? And in general, the context for that was social, cultural, and legal change that had taken place over the previous decade. And the inquiry itself was set up because of the pressure through the media and elsewhere of high-profile cases and media reports that were suggesting that Christians are increasingly being marginalised in the UK. And the inquiry sought to determine the extent of the problems they were experiencing, what was causing them, and what needed to be done in response. So that commission of MPs, members of the House of Commons, members of the House of Lords, was set up to clarify the situation that ordinary Christians, particularly Christians, but applies to other religions as well, face in the UK in their everyday lives. So this isn't theoretical, this is actual on-the-ground practical experience. They wanted to identify the particular challenges that Christians face, and in particular identify what aspects of legislation have created the challenges that are emerging. They wanted to identify what changes could be made to address those challenges, and they wanted also to encourage Christians in the face of some disillusionment and sense of disenfranchisement to continue to make positive contributions to all aspects of society rather than withdraw from society as some were advocating. So an official all-party parliamentary group was set up, and the committee included MPs and peers from all of the major political parties and from a range of Christian traditions. And the inquiry took oral evidence in three key sessions from key organisations, denominations, experts, legal experts included, and written evidence was submitted from a further 40 groups and individuals. The full report and all the evidence can be accessed online. I've got one copy here. But at the Evangelical Alliance website, the full report can be read. Let me just paint a little picture of the sort of things that are happening in the UK at the moment. And I'm going off the text here for the translators, so I apologise for that for the moment. I had a conversation with a government minister when the same-sex marriage bill was announced. It was an interesting conversation that went something along the lines of this. The terms of this bill, said I, are just totally absurd. You know, it's almost as if the government wants to legislate that black is white. It seemed so absurd and contradictory in its terms. And the government minister said to me, and I quote, "If the government wants to legislate that black is white, it can do so." And that was backed up as the committee of the bill proceeded, when many MPs said to the government, "Before we can have a debate on the same-sex marriage bill, we've got to debate what marriage is." Surely, no one had even tried to discuss that And the government minister replied, marriage is whatever you want it to be. And that gives you a kind of flavour of the world in which we're operating, or feel we're operating, where black seems to be white and the absurd seems to be what we're taking as normal. And if you're biblically minded, perhaps evil is being called good and good is being called evil, because the feeling amongst many Christians in Britain is what was a moral minority is now becoming an immoral minority and is actually being accused by many of not just being against liberty of in terms of equality, but actually being seriously evil. And those are the accusations and hostilities that Christians are facing in the UK at the moment. So much so that some leading commentators have identified the fact that really, if you're against anything now in Britain and perhaps in Europe, maybe in America as well, you have labels put on you suggesting mental illness and in need of therapy. So, in other words, if you're against Europe, you're Europhobic. If you're against gay marriage, you're homophobic. If you're against Islam, you're Islamophobic. And indeed, everything is being cast in terms almost as if you're against any of these self-evident realities, that you're in need of some kind of therapy. Your views are not socially acceptable. In addition to that, we have seen major democratic deficits happening within legislation. The marriage, same-sex marriage legislation was classic, where this was supposed to have been freedom of conscience voting in Parliament, but in actual fact, it was whipped behind the scenes and still was paraded as being conscience voting. We had pre-legislative consultation, but when the consultation came out, the results of it were not favourable to the government. They decided simply to sideline 500,000 contrary votes that came from the public who'd signed a petition, the biggest petition ever in British society. They footnoted them so that they could say 52% of the British public were in favour. But if they'd included the 500,000 no's, it would have been 84% against. And now we're seeing the same thing happening in Scotland, where the same legislation is about to go through, and they've got the same problem. They've deliberately lost 4,000 no votes. They're lost, so that they can present the terms of the consultation in favourable terms. And so there is a great sense of, certainly in certain areas, of the decisions being made and fixed before there can be any debate on them. And so although we saw the biggest petition in history virtually in Britain and major movements against, popular movements against what was happening, it was actually forced through. And now we've got a really difficult situation for the governing parties in Britain as a new election comes up, because many key core supporters of government have deserted the government because, and I was saying, they won't vote in the future. And we encourage people to engage with the democratic processes and have been doing that, but people are saying to us, we don't want anything to do with it in the future. And that's interesting context. But you see, in the context of that, the parliamentary committee found, and I want to go through some of the findings, that actually Christians in the UK are not persecuted. To suggest they are risks minimising the suffering of Christians around the world who face repression, imprisonment and death if they worship, preach or convert. The recent wave of Christians in the courts, and we've had loads of them in Britain, does not of itself demonstrate that Christianity is badly treated. The frequency of the cases, however, does illustrate something, that there is a narrowing of the space for the articulation, expression, and demonstration of Christian belief. And on the other hand, some of the activity of Christian organizations that have been set up primarily to defend religious liberty in the UK, and some of their campaigning and media coverage has been unwise and exaggerated and possibly counterproductive to the whole enterprise. So quite a variety of findings there. In addition to those findings, it was found that there's a high degree of religious illiteracy now in public and semi-public life, where Christian and other religious belief is misunderstood and restricted as a result, largely through ignorance and through minimization of Christian influence in public life. And that's led, in turn, to restrictions on how religious faith can be expressed, and has forced Christians to provide services, to go along with things that previously they would have regarded as contrary to their beliefs. And we've seen some very high-profile cases where people have been forced to do things, to be morally complicit in areas that their faith would and their conscience would prevent. One recent case showed a manager in a housing association who was demoted for simply expressing a view about same-sex marriage on his Facebook page. And he was demoted by his employer for that. We saw the Christian registrar, Lillian Liddell, whose case went to the European Court of Human Rights, who, although she'd been employed as a registrar of marriages for years, had not been told that she'd have to carry out same-sex marriages and civil partnerships specifically, which preceded same-sex marriages. And she was forced to comply or lose her job. These are the kinds of cases that I'm referring to. So the experiences of Christians seeking to live out their beliefs in the UK and speak freely, the Commission found in Parliament there is a problem there in the way that Christianity is being understood and handled by the public authorities. And it's a challenge to the nation's understanding of what makes for a plural society. And the way the media cover those cases is also profoundly worrying and poor, and contributes to the perceived polarization between Christianity and public life. The Commission found some very specific findings. Firstly, it found that the UK Equality and Human Rights Body, which is called the Equality and Human Rights Commission, was not fit for purpose. Very strong condemnation of that body. But that, in fact, they were doing nothing to help deal with the tensions between the different strands of equality policy that fall in Britain under the Equality Act of 2010. And court decisions have effectively relegated religious beliefs below other strands and effectively created a hierarchy of rights, something that quite a few leading lawyers are now accepting is a de facto situation. Religion and belief cases that have come before the courts have almost always been lost. And so the blame for that can be put down to some Christian organizations who believe that they should just simply bring every case to court, whatever its merits. And we've been critical of that, and the committee was critical of that approach. Although the organisations that bring those cases are claiming if nobody brings them to court, nobody will know they're happening. But on the other hand, they create precedents, and they also create an idea that all cases are good cases, whereas probably the more thinking parts of the Christian world in the UK and the rest of the world would look at it strategically and would say, yeah, you bring cases that you can win, cases that are strategically important. And so there have been divergences in the Christian world in Britain about how one fights the situations that one finds in terms of everyday life, in terms of legal engagement. And there are differences of opinion there. And the committee was critical of some Christian organizations. The committee criticized public and private sectors for failing to understand and accommodate religion and belief. Very critical. The committee found that there was particular concern about public order. And the Public Order Act, which monitors freedom of speech in public. We've had a lot of Christians arrested on the streets for preaching the gospel. People take offence. And the way that the Public Order Acts have been set out and the police have guidelines mean that if someone subjectively feels insulted or offended by something, they only have to complain and the police must act. Great pressure. So subjective offence-taking has become part of life in Britain almost. And there have been some recent changes to the Public Order Act, which we have been behind, to try and remove some of the low threshold involved in that kind of challenge. And we're finding that there's great confusion in the public world generally about how to deal with religion and belief, and a lack of a sufficient basis on which to engage. And so the key recommendations coming from the committee actually fit very well with what Malcolm was saying last night in the whole area of respect, namely that in Britain we do not have a clear understanding of what is called reasonable accommodation, which does apply in other countries, notably in North America. We don't have that idea, that concept. It applies in the area of disability, but not in areas of religion and belief. And Malcolm was talking about respect. Well, I talk about reasonable accommodation, where instead of conflict and confrontation in the court, surely a way forward should be in the area of, well, I call it mandatory mediation. Getting people round a table to find a mutual respectful way forward that actually accommodates everybody rather than ends up in somebody losing and the sense of disillusionment and disenfranchisement that follows. So, in conclusion, the report found there is a real challenge to Christians in the UK. But it also found that Christians have a major responsibility in how they respond to those challenges. And that has been taken on board in subsequent studies. Another commission was set up to help Christians engage with public authorities right through the UK and work better with them and educate so that there is an attempt to establish good working relationships where there is such an illiterate basis. I'm going to end there, and obviously many of these questions can be answered as we talk. Thank you.
Just to let you know, I am married with two children, just because, you know, you have lauded that. It wasn't on there, so I'll now, you know, mention that I am a human being with family. You know, it's always nice to kind of know where people come from. I live in Ottawa, Ontario, which is the capital city of Canada, and I am an unrepentant politics addict. I love watching politics. I'd never want to be engaged with it, but there you go. All right. First of all, I too want to thank the organizers for inviting me. It's a tremendous privilege to kind of be the Canadian representative and talk to you about some of the religious freedom issues that are currently going on in Canada. Canada has probably, like the U.S., an astonishing array of religions, and I think globalization and pluralism have really become themes of this conference. And the countries that have, an enormous plurality of religions are really
I zemlje koje imaju dosta zemlje, dosta religija i te religije, njima se rešavaju svakodnevni plan. Važno je da se vide, da se posmatraju te zemlje i da se vide trendovi. Želim da kažem kakvi su benefiti od religije. Imamo pojedince i organizacije koje imaju jaka ubeđenja. Ove religiozne pojedince, oni prave velike, daju dosta kontribucije svetu i koji predstavljaju katoličku crkvu papa. U Ujedinjenim nacijama oni imaju sirotišta za žene katoličkom porekla. Oni sami pomažu staračkim domovima, siročićima. Katolička crkva je najveća denominacija u Kanadi. Ima ih preko 50%, ali to je samo jedna religija. Religija u Kanadi pomaže sa hranu, bolnice za decu kojima je potrebno, sirotišta, izbeglicima i medicinsku pomoć. Mi također dajemo prava, one također pomažu sa brakovima, bebama i sa sahranama. Ali te religije imaju zahteve. One imaju način kako treba da se oblače, one imaju isto, imaju neke zahteve. Hindusi, oni su vegetarijanci, a muslimani ne jedu svinjetinu. Ali mi možemo, ti ljudi može da im se pomogne. A Kanada ima jako legalnu zaštitu i Kanada ima zakon o podršci religije. Imamo jako veliku konstitucionalnu zaštitu religije i slobode, ali to se samo utiče na, ali to samo se oslanja na vladu, ali ne na religijske i pojedince. Imamo mi imamo također ljudska prava koja može da zabrani diskriminacije gdje može da se živi, gdje može da se radi. Kanada je federalna zemlja sa 10 provincija. To je Quebec. Quebec je proveo pred skoro 10 godina da ima javni dijalog šta je razumno način da se oni da im se pomogne. Vlada je također stavila 2007. Ona je napravila kao neki odbor koji će raditi anketu da vide kako će to da se uradi. Osnove tog kolektivnog života. To je uključilo pravoslavno jevrejsku školu koja je bila protiv našeg oca. Ako bi stavili kao neku fasadu, koje su stavili fasadu na, ako bi mogli da stave fasadu ili da pokriju ta stakla tako da jevrejska dečaci Jer u toj je u teretani žene su vežbale, a ti jevrejski dečaci su gledali. I onda su je pitali, i onda su jevrejska škola je pitala teretanu da li mogu da stave neke slike ili kao fasadu da bi mogli da to pokriju. Ovo su, o tome su pričali i svi, i onda je nove vesti su se dohvatile toga, tako da je to eksplodiralo i na kraju su došli do rješenja. U drugom slučaju muslimanska grupa imala restoran za doručak i sirup od maple-a je poznat. I oni su pitali, ako muslimani su pitali ako mogu da donesu njihovi, ako oni donesu taj restoran kobasice bez svinjetine, da li bi to oni kuvali za njih. Ali to je bilo pod utiskom da je, to je bilo utisak da li mogu svi drugi ljudi koji dođu u restoran da im se kuva nešto za njih. Ovdje imaju dve važne pojedince. Mnogi od ovih problema bili su previše dati pažnje od strane medije, ali sve je moglo da se reši bez njih. Ova vrsta dijaloga i razgovora može da bude najveći, ovo je najbolji način da se ide napred i da se reši problem. Umjesto da se usvoji ovaj način kako da se rešava sa religijskom slobodom, Quebec je naša francuska provincija i prošle godine oni su imali kampanju na osnovi da bi napravili nereligioznu charter, tako da dominantna kultura ne bi uticala na njih. Pre dva mjeseca oni su dali spisak da niko ne može, da nijedan vladin radnik ne može da ima njihov religiozan znak, da ne mogu da nose nikakav religiozni simbol. I čak ni oni koji primaju pomoć od vlade, kao što su svi studenti, svi radnici u školama i bilo ko da ide da radi u vladi. Ovo zabranjuje da Jevreji ne mogu da nose njihove kape i da žene, muslimanske žene ne mogu da nose vel. Ovo također daje pravo tim ljudima koji su manjeni i daje njihovo pravo. Mnoga pitanja su išla uredniku, da su i mnogi ljudi tako misle da tako treba da bude i da bude ovaj način usvojen u ovom društvu. Ali to može da umanji način za one koji nisu religiozni. Ali Kanada sastoji se od imigranata. I ovo se dešavalo tokom kanadske istorije. I onda ne bi trebalo se tražiti da oni kriju njihov identitet. Ovi po problemi, ali neki problemi su otišli na sud. A jedan od najskorijih, muslimanska žena je trebala da je, jedna muslimanska žena je htjela da služi, da svjedoči u sudu, da nosi, veđu.
She is of course the victim in a criminal case.
I ona je bila, i to je bilo u vezi žrtve koja je bila u kriminalnom slučaju. Ona je žrtva u kriminalnom tužbi. I njeno rezonovanje je zašto moram da skinem moju religioznu odoću. To je malo taki, to je pitanje, jer mi ne možemo, mi se ne osjećamo udobno sa nekim osobama koje to nose. I jedna osoba, mi vjerujemo da osoba može da vidi osobu ko te optužuje. I onda tu imaš dva principa koji se suprotstavljaju jedan drugome. A mi znamo ovoj ženi da ona neće svedočiti bez njenog. Neće da svedoči bez njenog feređa. Ali glava vlade ne može da odluči za ovu ženu, nego su išli na sud i onda su išlo dole na osnovni sud i onda je kod istog sudije koji je rekao da ona mora da skloni svoj feređ da bi mogla da svedoči. Kao što ja znam, to je sada na apelu za sljedeći sud. Dosta ima kontroverzije. Da li može da se nosi ta feređa i stvorilo je dosta nesporazuma. Da li može to da se nosi ili ne i koliko to možemo da tolerišemo i u Kanadi. Želim da idem dalje i da koristimo drugim religijskim grupima. Haterinski braća, ne znam da li su oni jedinstveni za Kanadu. Oni najviše žive na farmama, kolonijama, koje zove harece. Oni žele da obrazuju svoju decu. Oni su tu bili već decenijama. Ali jedna hateriška kolonija ne želi, ona se odbila da ima sliku za vozačku dozvolu. I ona kaže, oni kažu da to je zbog drugog amendmenta. Ali da bi imao vozačku dozvolu, vi morate da imate sliku. Ali oni žive na farmama i da bi vozili svoje proizvode sa farme do prodavnice, oni moraju da imaju važeću vozačku dozvolu. Sigurnost vozačkog sistema je mnogo važniji nego ovaj religiozna briga. Moj univerzitet, Trinity Univerzitet, bio je osnovan od evanđelskog hrišćanina 150 godina i mi smo dali neki predlog za novi zakon i on ima sada profesionalni program za obrazovanje i za bolničarke. Ali bilo je dosta nesporazuma, kontroverzije. Mi smo zajednica, a brak je između muža i žene, ali brak je između dve osobe istog pola je legalizovan. Ali to također pokazuje da nije u javnom interesu da oni drže različitost u braku. Mi možemo da držimo religioznu mišljenje o braku, ali ti koji se naši protivnici su govorili da je samo brak između muža i žene diskriminativan i da nije dobar, nije dobro mjesto za pravo. Nije dobro mjesto za studente prava od istog braka, istog pola. Kada smo počeli naše obrazovanje, bilo je to odbijeno. Bilo je odbijeno na bazi našeg ponašanja. Išao je na Vrhovni sud u Kanadi, a i onda je rekao da je univerzitet može da učvrsti to pravilo na univerzitetu i to nije protiv Quebec je bio, sada želim da se vratim Quebec. Quebec je bio, on je imao, bio religiozan, ali od 1960. je bio, postao jako nereligiozan i tada je postao puno, onda je postao protiv religije. Bilo je dosta buntovnika. I sada je najveća nereligiozna provincija u Kanadi. U 1960. bila je tiha revolucija u Quebecu zato što je bila masivna, velika, ogromna promjena. U ovoj nereligioznoj procesu oni su bili ili katoličke ili protestantske škole. I kroz taj proces kvebekska vlada je unela novi program etika religioznog procesa i uči i onda uči o religijama širom sveta. Ovo je bila velika kontroverzija zato što su religiozni roditelji vidjeli kao da je to pretnja prema deci koja idu u tu školu. I zbog toga je postao legalni slučaj. I onda je išlo je do Vrhovnog suda Kanade i odlučeno je da u javnim školama da deca ne mogu da budu izdvojena iz tog religioznog časa, čak i ako imaju religiozne roditelje. Drugi slučaj je donesen od privatne romanske katoličke škole, ali privatske, sve škole su morale da uče kvebecki način školovanja, bez obzira na da li je privatna ili javna škola. Ovaj slučaj će se čuti u proleću, ali za sada je sud osudio protiv te privatne škole. Mi ne možemo samo da mislimo da će religija biti zaštićena. Postoji veliki pritisak da neko samo bude deo, pripada društvu. Religija se manifestuje u mnogim načinima i u različitim načinima života. Religija je važna ili srž vrednosti i u posljednjim slučajevima i ona je sada i onda se predlaže da je ona zabranjena.
Thank you very much, Dr. Horrocks and Dr. Buckingham. Now we have an opportunity for you to pose questions. I don't know we do have a microphone, and I assume for the interpretation, which is working now, by the way, if you are having any questions. So please, if you have a question, and I hope some of you do, please address it through the microphone.
Postoji neke diskusije da li su neki religijski problemi ili pitanja da li je krucifiks, da li je to kulturni izraz ili je vežba religije. Da li su neki načini donešeni
prvo, da li ću ja prvo da odgovorim? Nisam siguran odgovoru na to pitanje. Da li smo legalno jasni? Imamo dva slučaja. nošenja religioznih simbola. Jedan je na sudu bio, gdje je hrišćanin Kopto, koji radi za British Airways, htio je da nosi krst i nisu mu dali jer ima politika nošenja uniforme. Drugi slučaj koji nije otišao u Strasbourg. Isto se izgubio slučaj Shirley, koja radi za nacionalni zdravstveni sistem. Nisu je dali da nosi krst jer je to navodno zbog zaštite njenog zdravlja. I ona je izgubila slučaj. Ima mnogo tih slučajeva. Bilo je možda zaista umešanih zdravstvenih razloga. Ne možeš ti nositi krst dok operišeš nekoga za operaciju. Ne moraš to da nosiš na sud. Drugi slučaj je bio teži. Kopt, hrišćanin, nosi krst kao dio svog identiteta. Neki drugi hrišćani možda to ne smatraju centralnim delom njihove vere. Ali Kopti nose tako krst. Po mom mišljenju, to nisu toliko važna pitanja. Mene mnogo više zanimaju pitanja savesti. Kada ljudi moraju da se ponašaju suprotno svojim uverenjima ili će izgubiti svoj posao. Mislim da su to mnogo važniji slučajevi. I u nekim od ovih slučajeva hrišćani bi morali da budu više realistični u uživanju svog društvenog života. Ne mogu biti drastični. Svaki slučaj je poseban. I tako zavisi od svakog slučaja isto kako će reagovati sud u Strasburgu. I šta u Quebecu smo imali slučajeve, šta o ljudima koji nose simbole koji nisu religiozni? Ne mogu da se setim. Ako nosite neke druge stvari koje nisu religiozne, ne moraš da ih skineš. Ako zaista religija malo gubi prava, i to se izgleda čuje generalno, sloboda izražavanja je postalo pravo koje je više zaštićeno nego religiozno pravo. Ima više slučajeva i onda sud odluči da li će nečije pravo zaštititi ili ne. Znači, treba ipak paziti malo koji slučajevi će se nositi na sud. Hvala vam. Razgovarali smo o religioznim slobodama. Kako je legalna granica za religiozne slobode? U mojoj zemlji ima više religija. Kako naći ravnotežu između jedne i druge religije i legalnog sistema zemlje? Nisam sigurno da sam vas razumio. Sa moje tačke gledišta, sa hrišćanske tačke gledišta, seli smo za sto sa ljudima sa kojima ne bismo seli prije 5 godina. Dobar primjer je brak homoseksualni. I svi smo se ujedinili, svi religiozni smo se ujedinili, muslimani, hrišćani. Svaka denominacija, sve denominacije veće su se ujedinile i potpisale. Ja sam išao u džamije i molio sam da potpišu njihove kongregacije. Svi smo radili zajedno. There is the perception of a common enemy. Jer ta ideja od zajedničkog neprijatelja ujedinila nas je, mada mi u drugim stvarima nismo, ne slažemo se. Znači, imamo tu zajedničku pretnju i onda se ujedinimo. To je dobro. Jer vidimo više poštovanja između religija, između grupa koje se ne bi poštovale prije 5 godina. I ja vidim u tom pogledu napredak. Vlasti također. Vlasti vide da mnogo se može učiniti kroz organizacije religiozne ujedinjene. And to signing up to interfaith organizations. I tako potpisujemo se kao zajednička religiozna grupa. I to se vladi dopada jer ne vole ići od jedne do druge grupe ako su sve zajedno. To je korisno. Mislim da smo vidjeli u našoj zemlji pokret u tom pravcu. Ne znam da li to pomaže vašem pitanju. Možemo i kasnije još razgovarati o tome. Ja bih rekla da religije u Kanadi imaju manje problema među njima. I osjećaju se također ujedinjene i osjećaju da su ugrožene na neki način od svetovne politike.
Sikhs and Muslims in Quebec, understanding that if religious freedom is diminished for one,
ako je umanjena verska tolerancija, svi osjećaju da treba da zaštite jedni druge, tako da hrišćani štite muslimanske grupe i tako i vice versa.
Taking that a little bit further,
idemo malo dalje. Postoji li rizik ekstremne polarizacije jer postoje samo dve strane? Religiozna strana protiv nereligiozne strane. Da li je to rješenje problema, polarizacija? kada kažete zajednički neprijatelj, s kim su to? Ja sam se pitao kad ste vi rekli zajednički neprijatelj, s kim sam seo. Možda je malo to neprijatelj. Mislim, to je percepcija da nešto ujedinjuje grupe zajedno protiv nečega što je zajednička pretnja. Ja zaista verujem da je nereligioznost, svetovnost problem i pretnja, slično u Kanadi. I siguran sam u čitavom zapadnom svetu. I to je postalo agresivno u posljednjih 10 godina u Velikoj Britaniji. Postalo je agresivno u smislu da, iako oni kažu da hoće da rade sa religioznim organizacijama i radimo sa njima, sednemo s njima i razgovaramo s njima, u suštini u Velikoj Britaniji svetovne organizacije i religiozne organizacije sednu zajedno često sa vladinim grupama i sednu kao jedna zajednička religiozna grupa. Ponekad su konverzacije čudne i ne vode nigde. Ako idete na website, oni samo hoće da uklone veru iz javnog života. Iako samo kažu da hoće da privilegije da ukinu religioznim grupama, oni u stvari hoće da ukinu svaki izraz religioznosti. I to je cilj obrazovanja u Velikoj Britaniji. Hoće idu protiv škola koje su religiozne. Postoji percepcija zajedničkog neprijatelja. I mi učestvujemo u svim državnim telima, u Komisiji državnih prava, ljudskih prava, gdje su sve grupe, razgovaramo o tim temama. U Komisiji za ljudska prava pojavio se veliko kritička tendencija, jer ništa se nije uradilo da se spreči ta nepravda prema religioznim grupama. Mislim da imamo dugačak put da pređemo u Velikoj Britaniji da bismo mogli da obezbedimo bazu za dobru veru. U Quebecu također postoji polarizacija. Mislim da je dobro za hrišćane i katolike da se ujedine sa drugim religijama. Katolicima se dozvolilo da nose svoje simbole jer to je kao kultura. Na sudu možete vidjeti ove njihovi predstavnici mogu da, njihove kaluđerce mogu da nose veo, a muslimanske žene ne mogu. U tome smislu je pozitivno da se svima to, ako će svima ukinuti, da se svima ukine.
In a particular municipality in Saskatoon to having civic events where they said grace at the beginning of the civic event.
Jer ima nekih pokrajina gdje se pravi molitva pre početka. Razne religiozne organizacije su se ujedinile da kažu zašto da ne, zašto može se i razne molitve se mogu praviti na raznim sastancima. I to je bila kao neka alternativa, hrišćanska molitva ili ne molitva, došlo se do zaključka da se može praviti razne neke molitve, ne samo hrišćanske. Čak i moment tišine za neke mrtve i tako. Hvala vam. Još jednom.
Sada ponovo mogu da kažem šta se dešava kasnije. Idemo na ručak. Ako ste primili poziv na ručak i ako vam je rečeno da idete, a to se odnosi na delegate, mi ćemo imati u Hinckley centar koji je preko puta kampusa. U ovome nedostaje jedan tačka. Mi smo išli preko mostića. Da li znaš, Lu? Možda ćemo svi ići, moramo svi da izađemo pa ćemo vidjeti. Moramo tamo da budemo 215 i malo možemo da šetamo. Sada je, možemo, i sada možda nije najbolje vreme da se družimo, ajde to da radimo dok šetamo.